how some Maine towns are making their communities more age-friendly. We've all heard about the aging of Maine, that it's the oldest state in the nation. Some public officials are even calling for measures to attract younger people and families to the state. But efforts are also underway in some Maine communities to respond to the needs of an older population. I'm Keith Shortall, and today on Maine Calling, we'll learn more about the age-friendly initiatives underway in Maine, driven by volunteers and community leaders. We'll hear about national and international age-friendly models that are being developed and embraced by some municipalities. What would you like your community to focus on? Greater access to different modes of transportation? More housing options? A better sense of community? Maine Calling examines what it takes to make a town more age-friendly and how it can help everyone in the community. First, this news. From the MPBN studios, I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. It won't surprise you to learn that well-designed communities, communities that have safe, walkable streets, good housing and transportation, access to key services, and the opportunity to participate in community events, make for happier, healthier places to live. But just how do communities embark on the path to being age-friendly communities? We're going to find out on today's show. With me in our studios, Lori Parham. She is the state director of AARP here in Maine. Linda Weir is the director of elder affairs for the city of Portland and a licensed clinical social worker. And Patricia Oh is coordinator of older adult services in Bodenham, Maine. Thank you all for joining us today. We also want to hear, as always, from you. Is the community where you're living age-friendly? If not, what changes would you like to see implemented? Our phone number is 800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or paste, if you want, to the Maine Calling Facebook page. This is a big topic here, but I thought we would start out by describing who we are, at least demographically, Lori Parham, and I'll start with you. You're the lucky one. Help us understand when we say, and this is oft quoted, that Maine is the oldest state in the nation, but help us understand statistically what that means. What is that describing?
Sure. So a couple different numbers as we talk about Maine as the oldest state. Our median age is 43.7, which is the oldest median age. So as you think about not only looking towards 65 and, say, Medicare eligibility, if you think about workforce and what that means, that's a pretty old median age.
And median is just that half the people are below that and half are above.
Right, yeah. Right. And then also per capita, so given Maine's size, you know, often people think of Florida as the oldest state. There are a lot of older folks in Florida. But per capita, given we've got just about 1.3 million people in the state, Maine is considered the oldest state. We tend to go, you know, we can go back and forth with Vermont a little, but most often it has been Maine. So those are two different measures.
And I'm sure this is not your strength here, and I'm putting you on the spot here, but how would you describe maybe why that is? What are the factors that are leading to the aging of the state?
Well, there have been, we've heard from state economists over and over. We hear of young folks choosing to leave the state. They grow up here. They want different experiences. The question is whether or not we can draw them back. Changes in industry economically. So again, we've heard lots of debates in the business community and at the legislature in terms of what is happening, what we need to draw business here. We've had closings of mills, what happened in Bucksport. So folks are, in some cases, looking for opportunities elsewhere. But yet our retirees, many of them, as much as we talk about snowbirds going to Florida, many folks are staying here. They don't have the means to split their time, or they truly love Maine.
And we'll talk about what they say they want in their communities in a few minutes here. Patricia Oh, your coordinator of older adult services in Bodenham, Maine. Tell me about Bodenham and I guess in the context of why you're here today and talking about this subject.
Well, Bodenham was the first community in northern New England to join the WHO Global Network of Age-Friendly Cities and Communities. So since 2012, both the town manager as well as the select board have made a very strong commitment to making age-friendly changes in the community. There weren't a lot of programs or services in Bodenham prior to 2012. So when Bodenham was doing its comprehensive planning process, they did a needs assessment. After they did the needs assessment, that was presented to the select board, and the select board was impressed with the findings and realized that there were some changes that had to happen in the town. The town was already a great place to live, but they had to make some changes to make it a great place to grow older.
And why did they? What was the motivation? Was it simply to meet the needs of the people in the town? Was it sort of a humanitarian and a good municipal management initiative, or was there something else going on?
I think it was a good part of it was the request of older people. They said, you know, it's great what you're already doing for us, but we'd like to have a place where we can gather and where we can enjoy social and recreational opportunities. They wanted more accessibility to the town offices as well as to townwide events. And the select board heard that request. And so what they did is they appointed 7 members of the community, 7 brave members, to be the first advisory committee on aging. And since that time, they've implemented a lot of changes in the community.
And I mean, I guess it's fair to describe Bodenham as a rural community, which is largely what most older Mainers live in, the setting for most older Mainers right now.
Exactly. Making age-friendly changes in rural places is important because if you look at the percentage of the older population that lives in all of our different towns, the largest percentages are experienced by more rural communities. So it's important to make those changes in rural places. And oftentimes the changes that are needed are not things that are going to break a municipal budget. There are a lot of low-cost and, more importantly, even no-cost solutions.
All right, and we'll get to that. Now, though, to the City of Portland. Linda Weir, your Director of Elder Affairs for the City of Portland, which is not rural. The least not rural place. So from your perspective here, are the issues, the goals, the challenges for the aging population in a place like city like Portland, any different largely than what they are in a Bodenham?
I think they are different, and I think they're different even within the city depending on what neighborhood we're looking at. In Portland, we have lots of distinct neighborhoods, and some of them are centrally located near all the businesses and services, and others are further out. So we have some of the same issues, but much different. And also, I think our experience, well, first of all, we're a little behind Bodenham in our process. We're about a year and 4 months into this, and following the process that ARP helps us, guides us through to get this right, we started with an assessment of the city to find out what kind of things we're doing really well and what kind of things we still need to work on, and understanding that, you know, Portland's a much larger community and trying to break that down into manageable pieces. But so we needed a strong steering committee and people that have some advice for us moving forward. So we're working in that phase right now. But I think what it came down to for us, in sort of general terms, we haven't got our work plan finished yet, but top issues that emerge through surveys and focus groups with residents who live in Portland is, we may have great services, we may have a lot of resources, but if people don't know about those, that's a problem. People seem to be a little vague about what was actually available to them, so we're working on communication and information for older adults in Portland. Transportation, even though we have lots of much more accessible modes of transportation than some of the rural communities, we still have to make sure that our sidewalks and our streets are passable. And so it kind of gets down to neighborhood by neighborhood for us.
Sure, gotcha. So, Lori Parham, this idea that communities can and should start thinking about how age-friendly they are and incorporating that into their own plans, is not a main thing. It's not just a national thing. It's actually a world thing. It's a global idea that's been happening elsewhere.
It is. And we have collaborated with the World Health Organization on their international age-friendly community project. We're in essence their partner to see this through in the United States. The WHO went to people 50 and older. So this isn't just about seniors. This is really about people 50 plus and their families. And I can share some statistics on that. But went to people, held focus groups, surveyed to say, what are the most important things for you as you think about growing old in your community? And they came up with 8 broad domains that, in essence, are the framework for this work in the United States and across the world. Everything from housing and transportation that you might think of, but as Linda mentioned, connectivity, access to information, civic participation and employment, access to public spaces, so for exercise. So it really covers both physical, mental, and economic well-being.
So in some ways, when I was looking at some of the materials for this program, I kept going back to, well, gee, this sounds a lot more like, this sounds a lot like my town when I was growing up in it. So I live in the same town that I grew up in. It's changed a lot. But in the 1960s, it was a time when, so everybody knew everybody else, but everybody was kind of a neighbor and they helped you out and they knew whether you were sick and you went to town meeting and you went to church and you saw your friends and if you needed, you know where I'm going with this.
Right.
In some ways, and nobody drove 100 miles to buy something. They bought it all sort of right downtown. In some ways, is this movement a little bit about going back to some of the way lifestyles and design structures and municipal, I guess, designs that used to, that we remember from the 1960s or 50s?
That's such an interesting way to think about it. But yes, if you look at some of the data from national housing surveys, some research that we've done, we are finding a real move when we ask people how they want to live, how close they want to be to services, a real move away from suburbs, majority, not everybody, but an interest in moving away from suburbs back into city centers. And I said a few minutes ago, this isn't just about our oldest old. Especially in Maine, we see the importance of this work as we think about the future of the state, not only for people who live here, but people who are considering moving here. We hear from lots of folks, boomer age, who are looking to move into the city of Portland, for example, because they don't need their big house for their 3 children anymore. They're thinking about the future. They want to be able to walk places. They want access to art and music. And our research shows their children, the millennials, want the exact same thing. So if we start to look at some of these infrastructure changes, we think this is going to be hugely important for Maine's future.
So, Patricia, in a town like Bodenham, though, I could see this lucky group that volunteered to be on this this panel hearing from folks saying, well, we'd like a sidewalk on both sides of the street, on every street, connecting everywhere in town. We would like a bus service. We would like, you know, in other words, it could be a list of high-cost infrastructure items that makes it, quote-unquote, livable or friendly. But I think you said in your comments earlier, it doesn't necessarily have to be that. It can be some cost-free policy initiatives.
Absolutely. And what the Advisory Committee on Aging heard from town residents was that they wanted things like increased accessibility to the town office. Currently, our town office had a problem. I'm just going to give one example. The steps up to the library were very steep. There was nothing covering them in the winter, so they were very icy. The low-cost solution was to put heated stair treads on those steps so that it's safer for everybody. Another problem that the Advisory Committee on Aging heard about was access to the ramp. There's one ramp entrance to the town office. The low-cost solution was to remove the bamboo that was blocking some of the parking up at the head of the ramp. People wanted access to the Millay Waterfront Park. The solution to that was to make the paths in the park wider. Those wider paths now are great for people who are using a walker, people who are using a wheelchair, but they're also fabulous for couples who want to walk side by side, somebody walking a dog, somebody teaching a child how to ride a bike. So far, the needs that they've heard about in the community are very much rooted in the culture of the community and in residents' understanding of the capacity.
But in terms of long-term planning, though, you're also, I guess, making decisions that about sidewalks, about bike paths, and all of that sort of thing for more long-term planning that are also in line with the same goal?
Absolutely. And fortunately, Bowdoin, 90% of downtown Bowdoinham has sidewalks. So we are blessed in the area of sidewalks. And people don't want sidewalks in the area outside of the downtown village area. It's an area that, you know, if you have sidewalks, what are you promoting? You're giving access to people who are already celebrating the rural lifestyle. They'd rather take a walk on the snowmobile trail than walk on a sidewalk close to their house if they're living in the farming areas.
So, Linda, we're in a city like Portland, as you point out, different problems in different neighborhoods. But just big picture, how does a city plan, I guess, for greater livability and to address some of these qualities that older residents have said they want?
Well, what we're trying to do is plan on large scale and smaller scale for the same issue. I'll do housing, for example. We have a shortage of affordable senior housing in Portland. We know this. There are lots of properties that have long waiting lists for people to get in. So, you know, we know that's an issue. So if somebody's living in their own residence and it's getting too much for them to do the yard work and maintain the house when they're ready to move into a senior housing complex, that may not happen right away. So can we go out and build new units of housing now? No, but we can look at the city's comprehensive plan and make sure that the needs of these older residents, you know, are inserted where they need to be. And then on the ground, we can try to find services for these folks to keep them safe and able to stay in their housing that they choose for a longer period of time. So it's a two-level thing.
Sure. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more about what maybe your town, if you're listening right now, what your town might do to start thinking about this process if you haven't already. This is Maine Calling. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Sweetser, helping children, adults, and families address mental health and substance abuse issues since 1828. Learn more at sweetser.org. By Sillies and Sillies with a Twist in Portland's East End. Open at 11 Wednesday through Friday, 9 on the weekends, with vegan and gluten-free options. Sillies.com. And Bangor Savings Bank, offering locally serviced mortgage loans in Maine. Bangor Savings Bank. You matter more.
So listen, you want to have the conversation later? I'm happy to have it, buddy. But until that time, sit down and shut up.
That's New Jersey Governor Chris Christie confronting a heckler at a press conference. On the next Fresh Air, we talk about Christie's sometimes stormy tenure as governor and his bid for the presidency with journalist Matt Katz. His new book is American Governor. Join us.
Join us for the Diane Rehm Show coming up tonight at 7 o'clock. MPBN is offering two paid summer intern positions for college or technical school students interested in careers in the news journalism, digital news, and technical broadcasting fields. Candidates for the DAO intern positions must be attending a college or technical school, preferably in Maine, or have an existing connection to the state of Maine. Internships start in late May or early June. They last 12 weeks and are funded by donors contributing to the Memorial Endowment Fund for former CEO Jim Dow. Application deadline is February 15th. For complete details and information, visit mpbn.net.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, creating age-friendly communities. With me in our studio, Patricia Oh is coordinator of older adult services in Bowdoinham. Linda Weir is the director of elder affairs for the city of Portland. She's also a licensed clinical social worker. And Lori Parham is the state director of AARP in Maine. And we invite you to join the conversation. The number is 800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're going to go to the phone first here with Jackie Cressy. She is a Bethel retiree who's been working on an age-friendly project with a group of about a dozen other residents and retirees after learning about the age-friendly initiative at Western Mountain Senior College presentation. Welcome to Maine Calling, Jackie.
Thank you.
So tell us why you got involved in the age-friendly initiative in your community. What was going on there?
Well, I think initially we got involved for a very selfish reason. We're in our 70s, my husband and I, and we are concerned about when we're not able to drive and need services. When we heard Peter Morelli speak about the AARP initiative, we thought, wow, there's something going on, and let's get involved. So starting about last June, a group of us very informally got together, and Peter was very helpful. And in September, we joined the AARP network of age-friendly communities. In October, we ran a survey, not just for Bethel, but people from surrounding communities could take it as well, because we see it very much as a regional issue since we're so far out here. We've got the survey back. We've had it analyzed, and to no one's surprise, the top issue was transportation. The second issue that came to the top was people getting help for the household tasks that they can't quite manage on their own when they're staying in their own home.
So how then, what's the next step? You've identified the problems, which are fair to say are pretty common things that you hear around this issue. So what's next? What is Bethel doing?
Well, our next step is to focus on, in a public meeting next month, February 24th, that will just talk about transportation. We've asked representatives from Western Maine Transportation and AFCOG, Androscoggin and Valley Council of Governments, come and talk with us, and as a group to explore the needs that we see and how they might be met. And I suspect that we'll be working on both formal and informal networks of transportation.
So ride sharing and that sort of thing?
Yes, exactly. One of the things that people kept saying was that they'd like to have one number they could call to get the kind of help that they need. And so we'll be exploring how we might go about doing that to make it easier for, you know, people who get tired easily, who perhaps have trouble dialing the phone, have trouble reading the phone book or other written material because of vision issues, having one number to call, and then that person who answers the phone takes care of dealing with whatever that issue is, I think would be a great way to go. And how we make that work, we're not sure yet, but there's going to be a lot of brainstorming and hopefully a lot of people coming out to give us their ideas. This is going to require all of us to work together.
All right, Jackie Cressy, thank you for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jacqueline Cressy is a Bethel retiree who's working on an age-friendly project in Bethel. When I'm thinking about this issue of transportation, I'll open this up to the group here. And Jackie just mentioned they would like a number to call. I'm thinking about technology, the emergence of things like Uber. And can't technology, though, if we can introduce technology to maybe this age group that may not be as familiar with it, are there opportunities around this to get a simpler, easier way to join coordinated ride-sharing transportation projects? And should that not be also part of the effort?
So this is Lori. I'll jump in first. Absolutely. And Uber and Lyft have been great for folks to get around, but they really are not, they don't offer the kind of door-to-door service that a program like the Independent Transportation Network of America, and there's ITN in Portland, that programs like ITN do, or some of the small nonprofit programs in Maine do. They also tend to be expensive at times. And so One concern we have, and I sit on the board of ITN America, as we talk, is that older people and low-income people will be left out with this new model. And so ITN has been looking at Catherine Freund, who's their president, has been thinking way ahead on this issue and looking at rideshare and looking at kind of social entrepreneurial approach to the Uber and Lyft model. But it's definitely an issue. And so what we're seeing in Maine, to Bethel's point, there's island connections on MDI, is that it's becoming small and local to get it done.
But and it's largely volunteer.
Volunteer.
Right. And that's probably the way it looks. Is that right? In terms of transportation.
Well, it'd be great if we could get to an Uber or Lyft type application that was affordable and gave the kind of transportation that older folks and people with disabilities needed. We're just not there yet.
Sure. Let's go to the phones now to Anne in Bar Harbor. Hi, Anne.
Hi. Thank you. I am a longtime visitor to Maine who has fulfilled her dream of retiring. This is my third winter in Bar Harbor. And I just wanted to give a shout out certainly to Island, the volunteers at Island Connections, also Down East Transport, and At Your Service Cab, which runs 24/7. It's been great. I don't drive, and it's just wonderful. But I would also like to express my concerns about the governor's wanting to get rid of the income tax, which might sound very good to people on a superficial level. But for retirees of modest income, you know, we pay very modest income taxes, which are very predictable. And the increases in the other taxes that we'll have to pay, the sales taxes, and the inevitable degradation and decrease in municipal services that we'll face, I think will be devastating to many of us. So I just, you know, on one hand, it's the plus, you know, cheers and jeers that, you know, it's been wonderful. The community here is absolutely fantastic.
Okay, and thank you. Your phone is a little crackly there, but I think we got the gist of that, and I appreciate your call. I don't want you to argue necessarily here the wisdom of the notion of limiting the income tax, but how would you respond, say, from the state level? We're talking about community efforts here at a very low level and local level, but what about the state's, I guess, interest or responsibility in responding to this as a policy issue?
So one thing I will say, as I travel the state, the top issue from a tax perspective that I hear from older residents about is property tax. We changed the circuit breaker program a few years ago to make it a tax credit. The savings is not what it used to be. There has been a movement at the legislature to fix that. Speaker Eaves was involved. But that property tax issue is the one I continue to hear about. Folks are looking to move to a smaller place. I was up in Fort Kent, met a nice couple, middle-income folks, have a big house, can't find a place to rent. They want to downsize. They know what's coming, and those options aren't available for them. So I would say that is the big issue that we're focused on.
And we have heard this, as we said at the outset of the show, this call for bringing more young people here, or, you know, more younger people here and their families, so that we have a little more diversity demographically. But would you say, and I think I know your answer, that what you're calling for in these policy changes is good for them as well, and it would attract them as well?
Absolutely. So we like to say, as you think about, you know, going back to walkability, public spaces, what's good for an older person in terms of getting around is good for a young mother with a stroller and young kids. The ability to get outside, to get exercise, to have movement. Again, the data that we have comparing millennials to their parents, the boomers, show this overwhelming interest in access to alternative transportation from cars, the ability to get to art and music, to be connected. And so for us, this isn't just about our oldest old. Overwhelmingly, surveys show that people over 50 want to age in place. They want to be connected to their community. And we're starting to see the same thing from younger Mainers.
We'll talk about aging in place too more in a moment. But I want to go first to Thea in Bath. Hi, Thea.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. it's already been touched on a little bit by the previous speaker, but one of the issues that I'm running into, although in the past I've been very concerned about what's called generally low-income housing for the elderly and people with disabilities, there's also a great need for middle-income housing for middle-income people. There's so many of us who make a little too much to qualify for that quote-unquote low-income housing and who don't own homes and so don't have issues of the tax credits or things like that, and looking for accessible, affordable for us housing, and it just doesn't exist in the community. We get rejected from, like I say, the housing authorities and everything around because they're have subsidized housing for very low-income people.
Right, so you're trapped out. You're sort of caught. Is that do you see this, Linda, here in Portland?
Yes, we do. I feel like there's much more housing, even though that's full at this point. But there's much more housing that's considered low-income, subsidized rent, and the people in the middle who can't afford to go to a really high-end retirement community and buy in, but they have a little bit too much money and resources to fit the low-income bracket. They really are squeezed out, and so I hear that all the time when people are calling my office. One of the things that I do is give people referrals and try to give them information and connect them up with different resources, and that's always a really difficult one to find enough resources. And sort of along that same line, what we were talking about earlier is people who are trying to maintain their own houses are getting up against some pretty high property taxes over that once they go on to a fixed income, they can no longer afford it. So those folks are getting squeezed too. It's really a hard place.
Right. All right. Let's go to Tom. Tom in Falmouth. Hi, Tom.
I'm here.
Yes, hi, Tom. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, yes, I reside at Ocean View at Falmouth, a senior retirement community just north of Portland. For those who may not know where it is, we can reach downtown Portland in about 10 minutes.
Very nice one, yeah.
Yeah, what I'd like to bring up is the approach to selecting the retirement community that you're going to spend your retirement years in. Most people, when considering a move to a retirement community, tend to focus on the physical aspects of the community first. What will my apartment look like? How's the food? Perfectly natural approach. You see it, you like it, and it meets your needs. I suggest that that is only one part of the selection process. There are a number of things that you should consider. I'm sure that most people would consider the features, advantages, and benefits of any community that you are considering. But I would like to suggest that there is one overriding consideration that you could and should explore, and that is the culture and core values that permeate the community's culture. Like any organization, culture starts at the top. The owners, the senior operating staff. Bad culture in any organization is very difficult to change. Likewise, good culture doesn't change.
Right. It's a good point. Sorry. Go ahead. I'm up against a break here, but he's making the case, I guess. And Tom, it's easier to sort of get a glimpse of the campus and the services and everything, but you kind of have to swim in it a little bit to learn more about the culture.
Yeah, but it doesn't. Yeah, it takes a little bit of time, but you got to look at the culture because good culture delivers warmth from a staff that provides authentic kindness and careness and is born out of respect.
Good point. And with that, we're going to take a quick break. Appreciate the call, Tom. When we come back, we want to hear from you. We'll also talk a little bit more about aging in place. This is Maine Calling. Stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Holocaust and Human Rights Center of Maine, presenting the Hearts for Human Rights fundraiser on February 6th. Learn more at hhrcmaine.org. By Darling's Audi, committed to helping their customers experience the thrill of the ride with the 2016 A6 Quattro. DarlingsAudi.com.
Intelligence Squared US, where the world's leading thinkers debate today's most critical issues. The next topic up for debate, should the US let in 100,000 Syrian refugees?
How many Syrian refugees have been arrested in the United States for terrorist-related offenses? The answer is zero.
Every dollar you spend is worth $12 or $13 if spent in the region.
That's all coming up on Intelligence Squared US.
Intelligence Squared this afternoon at 1 o'clock. That's just 20 minutes. You don't have to wait to hear the latest Maine news. The free NPR One app for Apple and Android brings you the latest Maine newscast and selected Maine news reports, along with news from NPR. And This Day in Maine, available as a podcast for streaming, brings you all the day's Maine news all at once. Available for free, of course, around 7 each evening. This Day in Maine, available online at mpbn.net.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what does it take to make a community more age-friendly? With me in our studio, Patricia Oh is coordinator of older adult services in Bodenham. Lori Parham is the state director of AARP here in Maine, and Linda Weir is the director of elder affairs for the city of Portland and a licensed clinical social worker. Join the conversation. The number is 800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Aging in place is this idea, which I think is atop all the lists, many of the lists of what aging Mainers and others say they want most. It's most important to them, and that is to sort of stay in their community, stay in their home if possible. But it's also a tough problem, Lori. Talk about aging in place, where we are, and where we'd like to be in terms of creating a model.
Sure. It is a tough problem. We know it's where folks want to be, and the evidence shows more and more as folks are looking at different models for aging in place that it's economically good for local communities and for states. So the longer people are in their community, they are engaged. In the case of my grandmother, they're going to the hairdresser, they're spending money, they're paying taxes. People over 50 volunteer at levels higher than any other age group. So there's a good reason to do this. But it isn't always easy, especially as you get older, if you have debilitating illness. We've talked about, especially for middle-income people, and I agree with Linda, this is a huge issue for folks who want to downsize, who are thinking ahead, but just don't have options. They can't afford a continuing care community. They don't qualify for affordable housing. We need to do more to build that in. There's weatherization for folks who need to stay in their own homes. We have the oldest housing stock in the country, so for many people, their homes are falling down around them, and this is a real issue in rural areas. I do want to say that there are other models. So we have this framework that we provide, and thanks to support from the John T. Gorman Foundation, we've been able to work with cities and towns and provide small grants for planning and starting to do this work. But there's also the village model. I know that has been discussed on this show before, that doesn't start with the town, but starts with a group of individuals and often a nonprofit. You have At Home, At Home Down East on the Blue Hill Peninsula. They're expanding to Mount Desert Island, which is wonderful.
And the idea here is maybe folks move in together during the colder months.
So that's one model. Co-housing. So it may be that you work with your town to allow accessory apartments to be built so that you can move your in-laws right behind your house. Or it may be co-housing in those winter months so that you're sharing a heating bill. There are a lot of models and a lot of energized local Mainers who are trying to figure out what's going to work best in their community. As we've discussed, Bodenham and Portland are two very different places. And what we hope with the foundation of the eight domains that we can help convene and support local residents and cities and towns to figure out the model that works best for them.
All right, let's go to Phil in Hancock. Hi, Phil.
Hi there. So thank you first for doing the program. That's appreciated. I live in a a very rural area, and I'm approaching retirement age myself. My mother lives still on her own, barely, I would say, about 20 minutes away, and there's little or no help for seniors to help them really age in place. And I've contacted the state, and they basically said, well, you can get help from us 45 days after she moves into a nursing home, which, of course, she is very resistant to. So it seems to me that we really need to invest in home care and pay fair wages to home care workers who are very low paid. So we need a real holistic approach to long-term care, because if it happens, as everyone on your program is saying, at home, it's actually cheaper in the long run. And I think one of the long-range answers then is to strengthen Social Security.
All right, Phil, thank you. Any thoughts on?
Well, as I listen to this caller, I think about, I've been doing this work for a long time, and I know there's never enough money, there's never enough programs, and sometimes it's really looking at policy change, and where do we put our state dollars, and how do we best support people and actually save money to the system in the long run. But I really agree that it comes down to, those are sort of longer term planning, but it comes down to figuring out in your own community, in your own neighborhood, how to help people. And in Portland, we're looking at the resources that we have. For example, we have 22 neighborhood associations. Those folks know where the elders live in the towns, and so we're trying to organize around them to support people where they are.
And I'm sure they're motivated by the fact that in a few years, they'll be using these same services,
exactly.
Right? So in some ways, they're setting themselves up for help for themselves.
Some of our best volunteers are older folks, and they understand it, and they want it to be better for them and for the next generation.
All right, let's go to Sam in Orono. Hi, Sam.
Hi. Thanks for fielding my call and my question. I'm at the University of Maine in Orono. I'm a graduate student now, and born and raised in Orono, left for a while, and sort of had the opportunity to live in another country and with another culture, where their age pyramid would be almost the exact opposite of what Maine is experiencing. A lot of youth, less older people. This was in Central America, and what you noticed there was it seemed like a real cultural difference in many aging people were living with family members. There were multi-generational households. And I guess kind of, so one aspect of this, I think, is a cultural question. And how important is culture? And do we need a cultural change? And then my second question is, how important also is it for Maine to address the youth population that's leaving the state and look at maybe economic growth and creating more varied, diverse communities? How important, I guess, is youth support in building communities and to have, you know, synergy between youth and the aging population?
All right, Sam, thank you. Well, these are two big questions, one around culture, too, which is, I'm not sure what to say about that, but it really goes back to what we mentioned at the top, which was remembering back to the 1950s and 60s when there was, I think the culture was more around. Maybe it was being nosy about what your neighbor was doing, but also caring about what your neighbor was doing.
One of the things that we've noticed in Bodenham is that people are very committed to staying and aging in Bodenham. The culture that they have in that community, what they're experiencing right now, several of our people will say, you know, I'm not leaving town until you take me out in a box. So that also leads to another strength, because as we develop a volunteer network, the volunteers are from within the community. The people who are needing the services are within the community. So it builds that social capital between the volunteers and the community. It builds the community itself. It makes it a stronger place. We have a program called Rides, Inc., Rides in Neighbors Cars, where people who live in Bodenham volunteer to provide door-to-door and door-through-door transportation services for people who either can't drive anymore or who are choosing not to drive. And what we find out is that they build relationships. So it builds the culture that's already there.
All right, Sam, thank you. Let's go to Jim in Lewiston. Hi, Jim.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Thanks for having the show. I agree with a lot of the other callers and the panelists. I mean, I think it takes a holistic approach to deal with the age-friendly issue, and I think that tying in the younger people. In Lewiston, we've got an influx of, obviously, a lot of younger people because our neighbors from Somalia have large families, and I think that's one of the keys that we have to think about is how do we get them to integrate into the community, and there's been some resistance when, in fact, they are really a big part of our solution to how we can age in place because we need younger people in our community. Obviously, there was a mention of Social Security, and I'm sure Lori agrees that we need to strengthen Social Security. So many people depend on that alone to be, you know, for them to be able to live with dignity and in their own home is a terrific option. I think I'm just retired over a year and struggling with some of the issues of how do I stay in a place, what kind of help do I need, and how am I going to get that? And I think looking at our caregivers and raising wages in that area and networking to people who might be able to come over and help me with different things that I need to be able to stay in my house.
All right, Jim.
And I just wanted to say, I mean, I think long-term planning, I'm a retired planner, and I think we have to look at our plans, and we have here in Lewiston. But I do think that I went door-to-door in a campaign for city council. I'm on the city council now in Lewiston, and lots of older people want to stay in their houses, and they just don't know how to make that happen. So I think the holistic approach to, you know, making it easier for them, improving transportation, making livable, walkable cities. But those are important also for younger people. So I think we have to look at the whole continuum of age. And we have a lot of similar needs, and we can meet those. So it's not like necessarily just age-friendly, but age-friendly for everyone. So
right. Good points, Jim. Yeah, thank you very much. And, of course, older people, as you know, all know, vote. So politicians do tend to listen to some of these things, even if they don't always act on them.
It's so true. And here in Maine, especially, older folks go out to the polls. And Jim, thank you for your comments. Would love to work with you on Lewiston. You made some key points, and Phil as well. In fact, I wanted to mention, Phil mentioned a couple calls ago that we need to pay home care workers more so that we can do more care at home. There is legislation that was part of Speaker Eve's Keep Me Home initiative that deals with direct care workers and salaries. So you should definitely take a look at that. There was a package that really gets to these issues that has been moving through. This is the second year of the legislature.
All right, and let's go to Winterport here. And Randy, really quickly, if you could, we've only got about a minute left.
Okay, first observation is this program, we could probably listen to it in 20 years, and it would still be on topic because for the last 20 years, we haven't made a whole lot of progress. And one other point, walkable communities are wonderful in the summer, but in the winter, you really need to be able to get your car close to your home to unload groceries and if you have a disability and so on and so forth. So I don't think we want to get too carried away there. Thanks so much.
All right, Randy, appreciate your brevity there. Any thoughts on...
Well, winter definitely gives us some special challenges. When we did a public feedback focus group in Saco, we happened to do it during the winter, and the one issue that was top of mind for everyone was we need clear sidewalks. So winter does have its challenges, so I definitely hear what the caller says. And so we've just got to keep working at it.
And really quickly, any community, anybody, volunteer, person interested in this issue wants to find out more, Lori, where do they go?
They can email us at AARP Maine. It's me@aarp.org, or they can go to www.aarp.org/me for Maine.
And if they want to talk to someone who's worked on in a town,
they can look on the web. They can look at the Town of Bodenham website, and the Advisory Committee on Aging does have a page. They're also welcome to call me at any time.
And Linda?
Yes, I would welcome anyone to call me too. I think there is some information on the city's website at portlandmaine.gov, but I would just say give me a call, 541-6620.
All right, and we'll have this information on our website as well. Thank you all for being here today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Linda Weir, Director of Elder Affairs for the City of Portland, Lori Parham, the State Director of AARP Maine, and Patricia Oh, Coordinator of Older Adult Services in Bodenham, Maine. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today, and you can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our audio archives by visiting mainecalling.net. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at midnight. The executive producer of Maine Calling is Jonathan Smith. Tomorrow on the program, join host Jennifer Rooks as she sits down with MPBN's president and CEO Mark Vogelzang to discuss the future of MPBN. They'll talk about the company's plan for investing in journalism, music, and its online presence. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.